Don't know how many of you are here on the first Sunday of the year, but when I was introducing myself as the interim pastor here, I told you a little bit about our family history, and you might remember this kind of throwaway tidbit. I told you that my father was born in Nashville, and we have a family cemetery in Tennessee. This may not be as interesting to you as it is to me, but I'm the guy with the microphone. You're going to hear a little bit about that. Since we've been back in Tennessee since 2017, I've taken my family to visit this cemetery just one time. We went in 2019, and I've got a picture here. This is the sign going into the Polk Bilbrey Cemetery. This is in Overton County, small little town of Rickman. And the interesting thing about our family cemetery is that it's kind of famous. It's not famous because of the people that are born there, or that are buried there. It's famous because of a very particular kind of grave. And I'm going to show you a couple pictures here. These are called comb graves. I've got two different pictures, and a comb grave is where the grave marker is this long, thin piece of stone. There's two of them, and they're leaned up against each other at an angle, kind of like an A-frame. It looks sort of like a small stone pup tent. And you can actually see in some of these, there's one, it's got a little triangle that marks the beginning and the end of the grave. Now, it turns out that comb graves, for reasons no one understands, were very popular in the late 19th and early 20th century, especially in the South. That we find them in about a dozen states. There's about 3,500 of them that are known, and the best examples in the state of Tennessee are in the Polk Bilbrey Cemetery. I mean, we're practically famous. I mean, that who wouldn't want to spend it? I mean, forget Disney World. Who wouldn't want to spend a day going to look at the Polk Bilbrey Cemetery? And I want to tell you, the first time I went to the cemetery was as a small child. In 1977, we buried my grandfather there. That's the first memory I have of being in this cemetery. And but it wasn't the last time, because we would visit my grandmother in Cookeville almost every summer. And when we arrived, one of the first questions was, when are we going to the cemetery? Not, are we going, or do you want to go? The question was, when are we going? Because this is something that my grandmother just took tremendous joy in doing, was walking us around the cemetery and telling us about the people that were buried there, how we were related, a little bit of their stories. And we always said, we should write that down. We never wrote it down. We don't know what any of that was. But as a kid, go back to those comb graves. As a kid, I would walk around, back up one slide for me, Hunter. I would walk around those graves, and this was always a little freaky to me, because as a child, I didn't understand that those were grave markers. They looked to me a little bit like crypts. And even as a small kid, I knew I didn't really need to be afraid of a dead body. But still, when I was walking around, I was a little worried about what might be sneaking out from underneath those graves. Can you see? I mean, for an 8, 10, 11-year-old kid, you don't see that anywhere else. I mean, the best examples are in the Polk Bilbrey Cemetery. I bet you've had a cemetery experience. I mean, all of us have been to funerals, right? We've all buried people. We've put their bodies in the ground, or maybe in a mausoleum with their ashes. And so we've all been to cemeteries. That's not what I'm talking about for a funeral. What I mean is, you've gone to a cemetery just to walk around. Maybe you're like the Schaefer family and you have your own cemetery and you're a big deal. Or maybe your family's buried in a specific place and you've taken your kids there, or your grandkids, or for some other reason, you've wandered by and you've just wandered around with this little fascination. You know, Tennessee is a much older state than Florida, where I'm from. There's a lot of cemeteries here, and we have them everywhere. I mean, you'll be pulling off the interstate. There's a cemetery right next to the exit for the interstate. Mallory Lane, coming off 65. When you pull off, headed southbound, there is a cemetery while you're waiting to turn to get onto the road. They built the interstate right around the thing. I was dropping somebody off by a hotel near my house a few months back. And where there should be a playground for the hotel, there's a cemetery. And I went and walked around. I bet you've done this. Have you done this? And I walked around, I saw headstones, and they said Nolans. Pretty sure those are the people that started Nolansville, small little cemetery. And we've all had that experience of walking around a cemetery, either in part for a family thing, somebody brought you there, like my grandmother, Or like my kids are like, yeah, we went to the cemetery. Dad, you took us. We couldn't escape. You were driving. You've been to cemeteries. And if you haven't been to a small one, you've been to a big one. Maybe you've been to a Civil War battlefield. And there's a graveyard right there. If you visit the Carnton Plantation in Franklin, the McGavick Cemetery is attached to that piece of property. Something like 1,498 soldiers buried there, including, by the way, a relative of my wife. I mean, we're like Southern royalty. We got the Polk Builder Cemetery. We got people buried at McGavick Cemetery. We're just those kind of people. So I started to wonder, why do we visit graveyards? Why do we go? Like, what are we hoping to have happen there? I mean, I know if we're there for a funeral, I understand that. I understand if we're going to leave somebody there, but why do we go some other time? Why do we do that? What's the fascination? Why do we walk around? Do we think that somehow we're showing respect to the dead people that are buried there? Do we think they care about that? I mean, does it connect us with the past in some way? I think that's why my grandmother liked to go, because for her family history was very, very important. You know, you can go on websites that have pictures of every gravestone in the United States. We're kind of fascinated with this. You don't even have to leave your house to go to the cemetery. You can do it right from your iPhone. And we walk around these cemeteries. So it's one of the questions I've got is why visit graveyards? Here's another, maybe more interesting question. Why go twice? Why go twice? I mean, if you go to the movies, if you go to a movie in March and you go to another movie in April, the movie's going to change. Let me tell you something. I've been going to the Polk Bilbury Cemetery since 1977. The movie has not changed. But it's the same thing. The same people are there. The gravestones, they get a little bit more weathered, and maybe some extended part of my family's buried somebody new that I don't know about, but it's basically the same experience. The only thing alive in the cemetery is the people I brought in my car and the chiggers. If you want to go visit the Polk Bilbury Cemetery, my advice to you is to bring some heavy-duty off or insect repellent. Nothing changes. In a cemetery, nothing changes, and yet we go back. Some of us go again and again and again. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? And that leads to another question. First, I started asking, why do we go? Why do we go back? And maybe this is maybe the best question. Why are there cemeteries at all? I mean, why do we have them? I don't know how many funerals you've been to, but everyone I've ever been to, it hasn't felt right. It hasn't felt right. Because innately inside us, deep inside someplace, we know that dying doesn't feel right. It's not the way that the world is supposed to work. And I'm not asking the question how we die. I mean, clearly we need to do something with the bodies when people die. But why do we die at all? I mean, you don't know anybody over the age of 100. And if you do, you don't know anybody that's 110. We all kind of run out. We have this course that we run, and we're born and we grow up and we do all these things. And at the end we die, and they put us in cemeteries. I'm asking the question, why? Why is it that we die? Why do we need cemeteries? What is wrong? What's wrong with the world? And then a fourth question. This is the one that you're asking. He's asked about the graveyards. Why do we go twice? Why do we have them all? It's Easter Sunday. Is he going to stop talking about cemeteries? And why is it that we talk? Why do we talk about cemeteries, and what do they have to do with Easter? What we're going to do today is we're going to try to answer some of those questions, maybe not directly, but we're going to come at them kind of sideways. We're going to look at a very familiar passage in God's Word, familiar to most of us. But what I want to do is give us one big statement. One big statement that I think can help us put cemeteries into perspective, can help us think about graveyards in a way that's maybe a little bit different. And I want to give us that one big statement. And then at the very end of the service, I want to ask you a question. And this question may be the biggest and most important question that anyone has ever asked you and that you can ever answer. Today we're going to be in Luke 24, but to get there, I've got to set it up. And I want to tell you what happens in Luke 23. Most of us have read this passage, but in Luke 23, we see Jesus convicted for crimes he didn't commit, crucified, hung on a cross until he was dead. Crucifixion, one of the cruelest forms of execution ever invented by man. He hangs there and until he dies. His disciples, the people that have been following him around for 3 years, many of them witnessed this. There's men, there's women there. And the women have been especially close to Jesus. They've been with him for all or most of his ministry. They see him die. They see his body be taken down. His body is put in a tomb cut out of rock, and a big stone is rolled in front. Game over. Right on cue, the train. Stone is rolled in front. The game is over. And the women want to anoint the body in accordance with the Jewish customs of the day. So after Jesus dies, after he's put in the tomb, they gather perfume, they gather spices with the intention of going back and performing the ritual preparation that was common at that time. They couldn't go that night, and the next day was a Sabbath. They couldn't do any work. And so on the first day of the week, we pick up their story in Luke chapter 24. I'm going to read a dozen verses. And in honor of the resurrection of Jesus Christ and in honor of the text, I'm going to ask you to stand as we read the first 12 verses of Luke chapter 24. And this is what we read. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came to the tomb, bringing the spices they'd prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. They went in, but did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And while they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men stood by them in dazzling clothes. So the women were terrified and bowed down to the ground. "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" asked the men. "He's not here, but he's risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, 'It's necessary that the Son of Man be betrayed into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and rise on the third day?'" And they remembered his words. Returning from the tomb, they reported all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them were telling the apostles these things. But these words seemed like nonsense to them, and they did not believe the women. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. When he stooped to look in, he saw only the linen cloths. So he went away, amazed at what had happened. Go ahead and have a seat. So just in case we need the whole picture again, Jesus has died on a cross. His body is put in a tomb. The stone is rolled in front. Women who have prepared spices and perfume for his burial attempt to go to the tomb. They go to the tomb with an attempt to embalm his body, but the stone is not in front of the entrance. They look inside the tomb. The tomb is empty. That's a little uncommon. And more uncommon is that there's angels, and the angels speak to them, give them a prophetic word, tell them what has happened. The women leave, tell the 11 disciples. The 11 disciples don't believe them, but Peter goes to check it out. He runs. Everybody ends up amazed. And this is what Easter Sunday is all about. In the world, we think that Easter might be about chocolate eggs. Never figured out what chocolate eggs have to do with Easter. As a kid, we would take eggs and dye them. Do any of you still do that, where you hard boil about 60 eggs and you dye them different colors and put stickers on them? That's fun. That has nothing whatsoever actually to do with Easter. I like it when people come dressed in their Sunday best to Easter. The dresses, the hats, all the traditions, all that's kind of fun, but that's not what Easter is about. That's not what we're celebrating. This is Resurrection Sunday, which pretty much means this: a dead guy got up out of a grave and walked away. And if that happened today, that would be the front page of CNN and the front page of CNBC, Fox, BBC, Tennessean, Facebook, Twitter, wherever it is that you get your news. That would be the lead story. And here's why. This is our main idea. The resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything. It changes everything. But it wasn't clear to the disciples right away. Jesus had been telling his disciples for 3 years that he had to be killed and rise again from the dead. They just didn't hear it. They didn't understand. And so when the women went to the tomb and it was empty, they were a little bit shocked. You know, I think you might be a little bit shocked if you went to the tomb and it was empty. When I go visit the Polk Bilbury Cemetery, if I go there sometime and the comb graves, one of them is split open so that the two halves of stone are lying one on the left and one on the right, and there's a big hole there with footprints, can I tell you I'm not going to stay? Because that's really kind of terrifying. If you go to a tomb and there's a dead person supposed to be there and he's gone, like that, that's something. Right? The resurrection of Jesus changes everything. We didn't even talk about the angels and how terrifying that was for the women. First, they were in mourning, then they're perplexed, then they're terrified. This is an interesting day to be a disciple of Jesus. But the resurrection of Jesus changes everything. It changes everything. You know, it changes the way I go to a cemetery. Because when I visit a cemetery, when I'm there with somebody who I know had a relationship with Jesus Christ, I'm sad. I'm putting somebody in the ground. I know I'm not going to see them again in this life. It makes me sad. But I still have hope. And so when I go to a graveyard and I see that gravestone, I have the hope, and in some cases, the near certainty that I will see that person again. And it even changes how I go to a cemetery twice or three times, or when I go visit the Carton Plantation, McGavick Cemetery, 1,500 soldiers buried in a war that more than a century farther on, we can say, I think the answer to that one was pretty obvious, but men were willing to die on both sides of that conflict. For what reason? Cemeteries tell me that in the world is sin and we can't escape it. We all live with its effects. And that's why when we go to a cemetery for any reason, there's this sense of wrongness, of something that's incomplete. We know that the world is not supposed to work that way. We feel it. And sometime I'm going to go to a cemetery and I'm not going to come back because I'll be going there with my family and they're going to leave me. And I'll be in that cemetery for the last time. The resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything because I do not need to fear the certain destiny of my death. The disciples didn't understand that. And maybe you don't understand that either, or it's the first time you've heard it, or it's been a while, and so you're asking questions, and I can kind of guess what they might be. You're saying, are you telling me that a dead guy walked? Are you telling me that there was a person who was dead in a tomb and he got up and he left? Did that really happen? I would say the evidence actually says that it does. And the evidence for the resurrection is another sermon, but if we're going to engage in a conversation about it, could you set aside just for a moment your questions about what happened and give to me the acknowledgement that it did. Your next question would be, does it matter? And this is a question you're asking. Ken, I'm just here for Easter. Like, I mean, really, the only reason I'm here today is because I'm taking a picture, I'm taking a selfie, and then I can send it to my grandmother and she can know that I went to church at least once a year. You're here to check it off. And if that's you, I'm not mad at you. I'm so glad that you're here. I want you to come. I want you to come back. But can I tell you that if the resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything, it's worth more than one Sunday a year. Because if the resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything, if Jesus is the answer to the problem of sin in the world, and he is, and if Jesus is the answer to the problem of death that we're all going to face, and he is, if that's true, I want more for you than that. When speaking of the resurrection, this is what the Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 10. It's going to show up on the screen. And Paul wrote this, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it's with your mouth that you profess your faith and are saved. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Every one of those sentences ends with the same word, saved. And you might be asking the question, saved from what? Are you telling me that belief in the resurrection of Jesus Christ is enough to save me from the grave? To which I would answer, it doesn't save you from physical death. That's inevitable for all of us. But it saves you from the spiritual death and eternal separation from God that would otherwise come. We cannot deny that there's sin in the world, and we cannot deny that the world as it is not the way that it's supposed to be. And sin, our sin nature, the way that we act and treat one another, the things that we do, the things that have been done to us, the things we read in the news, that's not how God designed it. He wants to reconcile us to himself. And the resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything because it makes that reconciliation possible. The resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything. So my grandmother passed away in 2004, and we went to the Polk Bilbrey Cemetery to bury her in 2005. This is a copy of the death certificate. It's very interesting. It tells you where she was born, tells you when she was when she passed away, who her attending physician was at the time of her death. Actually, has the name of her parents on here. I never knew her parents. This is just a copy of the death certificate. It's a legal document. There's another one, don't worry. But here's what I want to tell you. This has tremendous legal significance. But it has zero eternal significance because my grandfather, my grandmother, my grandfather, they both believed in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. In fact, their headstone has this saying on it, "For angels never knew the joy that salvation brings." My parents have the original one of these in their file. They might not as well have one at all. It doesn't mean anything. My grandmother, who passed away at age 89, lives again and lives still in heaven. So we had the funeral on a Saturday in May. And it turned out that there was a Southern custom of which I was unaware. It happened to be Decoration Day. That was not a thing where I'm from. And we had the most interesting experience the day after her funeral. We all decided to go to this small church, a mountain church. When I say it was in a mountain above a holler. That's if I've got my Southern right. It was in a mountain above a holler, and it was made out of logs, kind of this log cabin structure, about the size of my living room, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit smaller. Excellent sermon, no climate control. After the service, there was a dinner for Decoration Day, and we had dinner with all the fixins. That's another thing I've learned in the South, fixins. In Florida, we have sides. Here you have fixins. So we had dinner with all the fixins, and here was the interesting thing that happened. When they found out who we were, they put us to the head of the line. And when I say found out who we were, this was the actual relationship. My father's cousin's mother was somehow involved or influential at that church, although she'd probably been dead for many years at that time. And because we were distant family relations, my family, who'd never been there before, who had not bought a ticket, who had not made a donation in the offering when it went by, we were given the place of honor at the front of the line and seated actually at the head table. It was really kind of weird. What a picture. What a picture of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They gave us a place of honor and treated us as family, not because of anything that I did, but because of the family from which I came. And we had a meal that started with fried chicken and ended, as I remember it, with fried chicken. There was a lot of fried chicken at that meal. Hallelujah. Do you know, John in his gospel writes it this way: to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. They put us to the head of the line because we were somehow the son of a distant cousin with a family relationship I don't even understand. I didn't understand it. Can I tell you that I've got cousins, and I also have a son and a daughter, and I love my cousins, and I do stuff for them, but for my son or my daughter, there's nothing I would not do. And there's nothing God won't do for you, including sending his son to die on a cross for your sins. Why do we celebrate Easter every year? Because the resurrection of Jesus Christ changes everything for everyone forever.